shaking my head in confusion at what I had spoken, when 901 said gruffly,
"You speak Russian?"
"I am Russian," I replied automatically. I shifted on the spot, my hand covering my mouth in shock. I dropped it and whispered,
"I am Russian?"
My eyebrows pulled down in confusion. I looked up to find 901 watching me, very carefully. Only this time there was something else flickering in his unyielding gaze. Acceptance.
"Russian," I hushed out.
I inched forward and asked,
"What is Russian?"
901 angled his body to face me. Lifting his hand, he tapped it over his chest, right over his heart.
"This is Russian. I am Russian."
He stilled, then used his hand to point between us.
"You and I, right now, are speaking Russian."
It took me a moment to realize that I was still speaking to him in this not-so-strange language. Then, as if plunged back into a dream, I pictured the scarred male from my visions, speaking to me in Russian.
"You are more than a number."
He had spoken to me in Russian.
"I will free you from this life, I promise. Just hold on."
The male had held out his little finger, and I had linked mine within his.
"I promise," I had replied.
Then everything went dark. I blinked away the dream. Addressing 901, I said,
"A male I dream of spoke to me in this language. He told me he would come for me. He told me he would free me."
A surge of emotion welled within me. I held up my little finger and I choked out,
"He held my finger and made me promise."
"Who was he?" 901 rasped.
"I don't know."
I tapped my head.
"I see him in my dreams, but I don't know who he is."
901 was silent for several minutes as he stared at the wall beside me, lost in his thoughts. I sat back, tucking myself in the corner of the cell, trying my hardest to remember something, anything. But nothing came.
"It's a country,"
901 said, breaking through my silence. I looked up at him. His eyes remained straightforward.
"What?"
901 blinked, then faced me.
"Russia. It's a country. We are in Georgia."
He pounded his fist over his heart again.
"Russia is my home. I am Russian."
He spoke the words almost like he was trying to convince himself about what he was saying, as if he was also trying to make himself remember. My stomach flipped, a mixture of sympathy and excitement. 901 then held out his finger. Pointing to me, he said,
"You are Russian too. The way you speak the words, it is not learned. It comes from your heart."
Leaning forward, I asked,
"What is it like?"
I glanced around the cell. Thinking of the blood pit, I wondered out loud,
"Is it like the blood pit?"
901 frowned and shook his head. He regarded me strangely.
"No, it's a country. The blood pit here is a place. A place Master created."
He gritted his teeth and hissed,
"This is hell."
I flinched at the harsh tone of his words. I lowered my eyes and admitted,
"I don't know what you mean. I don't know about anything outside of these walls."
I tapped my head. Catching 901's attention, I added,
"In my head, I see some things not of this pit."
I licked my bottom lip and continued,
"I hid under my bed. The room was cold, but they found us."
Tears filled my eyes. I could feel the sadness and fear I felt at that moment like it had just happened yesterday.
"Who found you?"
My stomach dropped and my face paled.
"The wraiths. They came and took us.
Letting a teardrop fall, I added.
And I waved. I waved to a boy who tried to get me to stay with him.
Taking a much-needed deep breath, I asked,
Was that Russia?
The place where the race came. Was that in Russia?
Yes, 901 replied.
I watched the thick muscles in his neck and shoulders tense, and he confessed,
I was taken by the wraiths too, from Russia.
My heart pounded so hard I heard its pulse in my ears.
You were like me,
I confirmed, and shuffled closer still.
And I was like you.
901 stared at me. He didn't respond. He didn't utter a single word. He simply stared until he reached for a chunk of bread on his plate and handed it to me. I took it and sat back against the wall. We ate in silence. I watched him as we did. 901 didn't look my way. When the growling in my stomach stopped, I leaned back against the wall and asked,
You don't want me with you in here, do you?
901 froze. I waited for several seconds before he shook his head and answered,
No.
I felt my heart deflate at his honest reply.
Females make the warriors in this pit weak. I don't want to be weak, and I don't want to fuck you. I don't want anyone. I don't need anyone.
I wasn't a pleasant gift to him, like Maya had told me the Monabi were to other warriors. I was nothing but a nuisance. I didn't know why, but a slice of pain cut through me at this stark rejection. Sighing deeply, I shuffled back to my corner and meekly said,
I understand.
901 remained unmoving until the Chiri came to take away his food. I closed my eyes, praying for sleep to hurry up and take me, when I heard the soft hiss of the bracelet, and then I felt the searing pain of the drugs injecting me. I stifled a cry as the drug shot through my blood like a flow of flames. It took only a minute for my thighs to clench together and my core to pulse in need.
No,
I heard 901 bite out. Opening my eyes, still able to speak through the drugs, I said,
Don't.
901 had jumped to his feet. At my words, he stilled. As a wave of blistering heat poured through me, crashing at the apex of my thighs, I met his furious gaze and commanded,
Don't.
I gritted my teeth when my stomach cramped.
Just leave me.
901's head whipped back in shock.
You'll die.
I saw his hands ball into fists at his sides. A moan escaped my mouth as I slid down the wall, placing my hand between my legs. 901's chest moved up and down, a sign of his ragged breathing. I could see his length hardening under the thin fabric of his black pants. My need was causing him to react. He cursed, then took a reluctant step forward.
No, stop,
I shouted. He did.
You'll die,
he snarled, sounding angry this time. Even as the pain, the unbearable need, built within me, I managed to demand,
Then let me die.
I saw the impact my words had on the warrior. He staggered back, my response seeming like a physical blow. Recovering quickly, he moved to my side, his expression determined and stern.
I won't let you die.
A bead of sweat dropped off my head as he glared at me. My heart sank when I realized he meant every word.
But I wanted to. I wanted to let go.
Then, as 901 hovered close by, I also heard the scarred male from my dreams telling me to hold on. I felt my little finger twitch, as if I could still feel his finger wrapped in mine. I squeezed my eyes shut as a bolt of pain forced my back to arch. Panting, breathless, I opened my eyes and pointed to the cell door. 901 followed my finger and asked,
What?
Guard,
I rasped.
Get the guard to take me.
This time, 901's gaze wasn't hard or stern. It was positively savage.
You want a guard over me?
Unable to keep fighting, my body sagged on the floor and I said, I don't want you to take me. Because... I hissed as my channel contracted, then forced myself to add, You don't want me. You don't want this. I couldn't stand to be the one who took away your choice. I stretched my body, trying to fight off the cramp seizing my limbs. My vision became blurry as the drugs built and built, making it almost impossible to endure. 901's expression became engulfed with pain. As quickly as it came, it disappeared. As I pressed my fingers to my core, 901 kneeled beside me, his blue eyes beaming down directly at mine. I watched as his breathing increased. I watched as his hands hooked onto the waistband of his pants and pulled the fabric down. I shifted as his hard length came into view and he stroked it with his hands. My legs opened as he began crawling over me. His huge chest covered mine, his arms bracing on either side of my head as he lay at my entrance. I shook my head, feeling the cold floor beneath me. But 901 leaned down, and in a familiar, tender move, brushed back the sweaty strand of hair from my forehead. I paused, the pain momentarily forgotten as he watched me. A small blush covered his doubled cheeks as he studied my face. In this moment, an unfamiliar feeling sprouted in my heart. This feeling caused me to raise my hand and place it on his cheek. 901 gasped at my touch, his lips parting at the feel. And we stayed that way, paused in time, locked in the moment, just his gaze trapped in mine. As another wave hit me, 901 began pushing inside me, quickly extinguishing the brunt of the pain. I gripped his heavy arms as a loud, needy cry spilled from my lips. Sliding his hand from my head to my chin, 901 made me look into his eyes as he said,
I do want you, Krasivia. I won't let you die. I'll take you, but I just can't let you have me. It'll make me weak.
Beautiful, my mind translated. 901 called me beautiful. I moaned as he slammed into me, his thrusts soothing my pain. As I lost my mind to the drugs, Krasivia, 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 circled in my head. Beautiful, he had said. Krasivia. 901 thought me beautiful, and he had told me so in Russian, in the language of our hearts, the language of our home. I smiled as his chest brushed against my breasts. I smiled as I looped my arms around his strong neck, because I also thought this deadly warrior was beautiful. He was simply more.
8. Luca. Again, Valentin demanded as I circled him in the ring. I stretched my fingers, then formed them back into fists. I watched as Valentin jumped to his feet, a trickle of blood running down his chin from his lip. I charged, slamming my fist into his face. Valentin's head whipped back, but recovering quickly, he shook off the blow and delivered a hookshot to my ribs. My breath was taken away, but before he could gain advantage, I swept his ankle and dropped him to the ground. I saw Zal pacing the ring, desperate for his chance to spar. But when Valentin flipped me onto my back, I quickly focused on the task at hand. Valentin's hands wrapped around my neck, his scarred face hovering close, as his eyes shone brightly with bloodlust. Lifting my hands to wrap around his neck, I squeezed hard, each of us robbing the other of breath. I could feel my face reddening under Valentin's grip, but he was faring no better than I was. Our bodies were screaming for air. Enough! Zal called, his hand slapping on the floor. But I stared into the eyes of this killer trying to take my life. I could see in his blue eyes that he wouldn't give up. Lifting my leg, I kicked out, unbalancing the male sitting above me. Rolling over, I straddled his waist, knocking his hands off my neck. My grip slipped from his neck. Zal then pulled me from Valentine as he roared and went to strike again. I panted, muscles braced to react as Valentine paced the floor of the ring, his deadly gaze slicing over Zal to mine. I pushed off Zal and rushed to Valentine, standing toe-to-toe with the psychotic male. "I want to kill you," he snarled, then pushed me back. I moved back directly in his path and ordered, "Resist it!" I ordered again, and watched the newest member of our Bratva war with the monster living inside. "No," he replied, abruptly standing still, every packed muscle in his huge body tensed and shaking as he tried to restrain his rage. "I want to kill!" he bellowed. Zal moved beside me, crossing his arms over his chest. His black hair hung down over his chest, dripping with sweat. "Fight it," he ordered too. Valentine's stare almost eviscerated him on the spot. "I'm a killer," he hissed, his neck cording at the effort it was taking not to kill us where we stood. "I fucking kill!" This time, neither Zal nor I spoke. If Valentine was to stand with us as a future Bratva king, if he was to stay and build our brotherhood to be unrivaled and feared, he had to learn how to conquer his conditioned instinct to strike. Zal stepped closer, and Valentine bared his teeth. "For Zoya," he said. The words immediately had an impact on our brother. Valentine stilled. He held Zal's gaze, and Zal held his. As the minutes passed, the rage within Valentine reduced to a simmer. That was as low as it got for the scarred Russian. He was always angry, always filled with pain. The three of us stood there silently until I said, "To be a fighter, you have to know when to contain your rage. You must use it to fuel your need to kill, but hold it back enough to not let it blind you." "I'm not a fighter," Valentine bit out. "I'm a fucking torturer. I'm an assassin. I don't dance in a ring for entertainment. I extract pain slowly until they scream." Zal stepped back. I knew it was to distance himself from the male that held his sister's heart. The male that, before he loved her, had tortured her. Had exacted the pain he talked of so excitedly. Valentine's chest worked up and down as he tried to gain control. I had turned to speak to Zal when Victor came running through the back door of the dungeon. He wrapped his hands on the office door as he passed. My father and Kirill walked out from doing business and moved toward us in the training ring. Victor stopped and tried to catch his breath. "What?" Kirill asked, adjusting the cuffs on his shirt. His eyes moved to Valentine, and I saw the flash of pride he had for our new brother. Valentine was a monster from your nightmares, and now he was a potential Red King of the Bratva. My father-in-law couldn't wait for the day he could introduce the new Bratva Kostova Circle to the other crime bosses of New York. He knew exactly what seeing the three of us would inspire. Pure fear. Victor inhaled deep and, looking me dead in the eye, said, "I know how we get you into the pit." The moment his words reached my ears, my heart started thundering in my chest. "How?" I pushed. Zal came to stand at my right. Valentine, also eager to hear my old trainer, stood at my left. Victor looked at the three of us and explained. "I've just heard from my contact in Georgia that Arziani is holding a death match tournament in the Blood Pit. He holds regular matches, but he has a group of champions that cannot be defeated. The investors, The crime bosses that go there regularly to gamble and pit their fighters against his were becoming frustrated with Arziani's men never losing. To prove Arziani doesn't rig his matches, he is giving other gulags he's invested in, and bosses outside his network, a chance to pit fighters against his men and the others entered. It's an ultimate tournament. He looked to Kirill and Ivan, then said with emphasis, "Big stakes. The money to be won is in the tens of millions." "But how do we get in?" I asked, confused. Victor glanced nervously to my father, then to the Pecan. My father frowned, but answering my question said, "Each gulag can enter up to 3 of its champions to fight in the tournament." He swallowed. "I was contacted by an old colleague to ask if I had any fighters I wanted to enter." Pure adrenaline surged through my body. I stepped forward, my fingers twitching, and asked, "And you said yes, yes?" Victor slowly nodded. "Yes, but better still," he paused. "My contact, him and his 3 brothers work for Arziani. His brothers are guards in the pit." Valentin began rocking beside me and hissed, "Wraiths." Victor paled, but shook his head. "No. They were taken and made to work there to repay their father's gambling debts, just as I was." Victor faced me again. "Only Abel was repaying the debt as a driver, like me. He had told me that because he couldn't pay the money back in time, they took his brothers too. They made them wraiths, and made Abel move to their officer ranks." Excitement flared in Victor's eyes. "They all hate Master Arziani and want out. I'm sure they can help us once we are inside, if we make it worth their while." Victor paused. Then flicking a frustrated look to Valentin, he added, "Not all of the guards are there because they believe in Arziani's cause. In fact, Abel told me he believes a good 30% or more are there to repay gambling debts, their own or someone in their families." "So that's our way in?" I queried, and crossed my arms over my chest. "We go in as fighters." I glanced behind me to Valentin and Zal. "We fight in the tournament and find a way to kill Arziani from the inside?" "We can't get in any other way," Victor said. Valentin walked beside me. A new energy seemed to be running through his veins. "He's right. We won't get in the pit ourselves." He glanced to me, and I could see his need for blood shining back at me. "But we can fight. We can go in as gulag warriors." "You're not a fighter," Zal said from behind. When I glanced back, Zal was frowning. He was glaring at Valentin. Valentin was seething on the spot as he glared right back. "I can fucking fight," Valentin snapped. Zal stepped forward and pointed at me. Luca was the champion of his gulag. I fought as a prototype of Jakua. We are fighters like those in the pit. We were raised to do nothing else. You were raised to torture and kill. You are different. You're not a deathmatch fighter. Valentin's lips rolled back from his teeth as he squared up to Zal. "I can kill in more inventive ways than you, Kostova. I can kill you in ways you can't even imagine." He looked to me and said, "I'm going." "He'll be a liability," Zal argued as Valentin practically radiated death on the spot. "That's my sister in there. She's that dick's whore, and you expect to go without me? Not happening." "He knows you," I said, then looked to Zal. "He knows you, too." They both looked to each other, then at me. "I'm going," they said in unison. I exhaled deeply. Facing Victor, I stated, "He doesn't know me. No one in that pit will know me. My gulag was in Alaska. From what we can tell, once it was emptied when I escaped, it never reopened. I'm the one they don't know." "Luca," my father spoke. I turned toward him. His face was red with frustration. I knew why. He didn't want me to go. Victor stepped forward. "We need to submit 3 fighters or none at all, Luca." He waved his hand in Zal and Valentin's direction. "I've thought of how to get them in." "How?" Zal asked. Shrugging, Victor said, "We enter under a fake name. Not the Volkov or Tolstoy dungeon, but a decoy. Abel and his brothers will ensure we get on the list without being checked," he explained. "We can say that our men brought these 2 from the males that used to guard them. Zal from one of Jakwa's, and Valentin from the mistress." "The mistress was his sister," I argued. "He'll kill Valentin the minute he sees him." "I'm going," Valentin thundered. I held out my hand for him to be quiet. He silenced, but his lips curled in annoyance. Arziani hated his sister. She was the bane of his existence. Abel said that when Arziani got word of her death, he laughed. He knew he was better off without her in his life. He flashed a worried look to Valentin, but continued. Abel said that the only thing he cared about was the female Mona being held by the mistress. He nodded his head in Valentin's direction and clarified. His sister. Now he has her. He doesn't care about the rest. My pulse raced at the possibility of getting the opportunity to fight again, but more important, at killing Arziani and ending this ring of slavery once and for all. At putting an end to kids being sold like slabs of meat, being tested upon like rats, forced to fight and forget they're humans. Nothing more than killing machines. My mind circled with the information. Looking to Valentin, I said, "If you come, we'll have to teach you how to fight for the pit. We'll have to get you trained with a weapon." "I have my picanas," he replied. "Guns and cattle prods aren't allowed in the rings," Zal replied. Valentin's eyebrow raised, and he said, "But short metal spears will be. I'm used to the feel of them in my hands through using the prods. They're a part of me. I can be just as efficient without their electrical charge as I am with it." Zal turned to me and nodded. Facing them both, I announced, "If we do this, if we all go in, we may not all make it out alive." A shroud of silence descended around us. Valentin was the first to step forward and speak. "I'm going in. That asshole made me this thing I am today, and he has my sister. I'm going in. And I won't die. I won't die until his heart stops." I nodded, then looked to Zal. Arms crossed over his chest, he confided, "I don't want to fight again. I want my life to be with my Talia, but..." He sighed, and I saw his inner demon shine through. "But Henri and I were tested upon there, made to fight in the childhood pits." He shook his head. "Until Arziani and this blood pit are destroyed, we'll never be truly free, will we? Everything each of us has been through stemmed from this enterprise." Zal looked to my father and Kirill. "Arziani is bigger than even the Volkov Bratva. If we are to keep our standing here, if we are to give our females good lives, safe lives, we have to stop this male now." before he comes for us. Let's take the fight to him. Zal's face clouded with the need to kill, and he concluded, before he comes for us. Every word Zal said hit my heart. I turned to Victor. When is the tournament?
4 weeks, he replied. It lasts 4 days. 2-man matches until 4 fighters reach the final. No man will be paired with a gulag mate until they meet in the final. Then it's a 4-man battle for the championship. Winner gets his freedom. Arziani's tournament prize is freedom. I raised my eyebrow at that. Freedom for males captured and forced to fight would make them fight that much harder. It would make them that much more difficult to beat.
We all need to make it into the final battle, I said, and looked to Valentin and Zal. They both nodded. We can use the next few weeks to understand the pit and plan how to attack. I looked back to Victor and said, contact your mail. We need to be sure we have them as our allies, then use their influence when we're in there with those not committed to Arziani and his cause. Promise them whatever they want. Money, life here in New York, anything. Just get us into the blood pit. We'll take it from there. Victor nodded and rushed out the dungeon's door. Zal and Valentin came to stand beside me. Zal laid his hand on my shoulder. When I met his eyes, he nodded his head. No words were necessary. I could see the conflict haunting his eyes, as much as I could feel my own. We were different males now, had different lives, yet at the same time, until Arziani, the puppet master of our personal hells, was dead, we would always be the same captured males we had been for most of our lives. We would be forever imprisoned by our pasts. We would never truly move on. Addressing Valentin, I said, we need to use the 4 weeks to train you. I then spoke to Zal. We need to train ourselves again, too. Ask Victor to get us ready. We have no choice but to come back to our females. To do that, we need to defeat every fighter that gets in our way. It's the only way we can go. We go to win. Zal held out his hand, and I shook it. Valentin did the same. As we looked to one another, a surge of excitement welled up in my heart. In 4 weeks' time, for 4 days, I would once again be Rays. I had missed being Rays. I had missed and craved the blood I would shed. For 2 weeks, I could be the Gulag champion again. Then I would forever leave him in the past. Turning on my heel, I jumped from the cage, and my father stepped in my path. Kiriel fell in behind him, a look of serious concern on his face. But it was my papa to whom I gave my attention. The sad yet stubborn expression on his face was hard to ignore. I won't allow it, he said, and shook his head. Your mama and Kiza won't want this, Luca. What the hell are you thinking? Glancing down to the floor, I then looked back and said, how many more kids are in gulags around the world? How many are stolen from group homes or the streets and being forced to fight? I held on to my father's arm and said, how many papas are searching for their lost sons? Not knowing? Never believing they could be under the control of some fucked-up psychopath who has a delusion of being a sadistic Caesar from ancient Rome? My father paled, but I kept going. It's not over, Papa. Even though I've been back here in New York with you, Kiriel, Mama, Talia, and Kiza, I've never been fully present. I searched for a way to make him understand. Kiza's face filled my mind's eye. I pictured my hand on her stomach, which punctured a hole in my heart when our baby had kicked. Pushing the lump from my throat, I said, Kiza is due to have our baby soon. I can't live in a world with my child while being haunted by the past. To be the father I want to be, the father you are, I need to end this once and for all. The Arziani Empire must fall, and I must be the one to do it. This time, I looked to Kirill and said, To be the Pakan of our Bratva, I have to rid myself of all the pain I still carry with me. Arziani is the root of all this evil. He's the snake, and I'm going to rip off his fucking head. Luca, my father rasped, and placed his hand on the nape of my neck. He brought my forehead to his and said, I'm proud of you, son, but I cannot rest until you have taken this bastard down and returned home safe, for good this time. Thank you, I hushed back. Lifting my head, I met his worried gaze and said, I'm Reyes. I'm the champion. I don't lose. I thought of my beautiful wife and our child. I thought of Zal and Talia, Valentine and Zoya, and I knew I wouldn't fail. This was my family now, and we would all survive. We had to. There was no other choice. Kirill walked around my father and kissed my head. He didn't speak, but I didn't need words to see the pride on his face. Kirill had been the Pakan for decades. He knew that leaders sometimes have to sacrifice a part of themselves for the greater good, and killing Arziani was for the greater good. I had 4 weeks to recall and embrace the savage killer I had pushed down deep. As I made my way home, I flexed my hands, staring at the fingers that would soon be reacquainted with the bladed knuckle dusters they knew so well. And with every mile driven toward my home, the identity tattoo on my chest burned hotter and hotter. 818 was breaking back through, pushing Luka Tolstoy aside. Temporarily, I had to embrace the monster within. I'd let him take the reins. Then, when I arrived at the blood pit, I'd let him unleash hell. For one very last time. Before I laid him to rest. For good. 9:01 2 weeks later. I stood in the center of my cell, waiting for my time to be called. Tonight was the first show fight Master had planned for his tournament investors. He had told me over the past 2 weeks that these matches were important to secure money for the spectators. He impressed on me that these investors will gamble on the fighters, and some more important bosses might enter their own. And as he told me in no uncertain terms that I was to take my time with my opponents, draw out every kill, obey his every command, he even offered me a bribe. If I did as he instructed, he would continue sending 152 to me every night. This was exactly why I intended to kill my opponent in 3 seconds flat. My gut clenched as I thought of the past 2 weeks. Then I thought of what my nights would become after tonight. She'd be gone. It was what I'd needed. Though I was starting to think it wasn't what I wanted. Since that night 2 weeks ago, when she had pleaded with me to let her die, and she had spoken to me in Russian after I had called her a whore, we had barely spoken. That night, I had let myself get too close. I had asked her too much, listened to her too much, felt too much. I squeezed my eyes shut, trying to block out the memory of how she had told me to get a guard instead, of how much that pissed me off, the repulsive thought of her under a wraith. Something inside of me had broken when she'd pleaded for that version of hell. She wasn't a whore. I hadn't meant what I had said. I was pissed, lashing out. I hadn't known she was Russian. Her dark hair and features made her appear Georgian. It only made me want her more. She was like me. Master still sent her every night. I released inside her when the drugs made her need me, but we never spoke. She slept in the corner of the room, and I stayed on my bed. She knew I didn't want more. She never asked for more. I gave only as much as I was willing to give. Master's plan to fuck with my mind wouldn't work. I couldn't let it. I'd defy him tonight, and he'd punish me by taking 152 away. I glanced down at my hands wrapped around my Kinjal's handles at that thought. They shook. My mind clogged. It stabbed with the sound of 152's moans as I took her as mine. Her touch was sensuous as her hands scraped on my back. The look in her eyes as they cleared from the drug and the aftermath of our releases was so welcome. It was when her true self came through. The look that showed me her gratitude. The look that seared me on the spot. Krasivia. Footsteps on stone outside the cell made me walk to the door. 667 was walking past. He was dripping with sweat, marked in slashes from what looked like a bladed chain. He flicked his chin as he walked by. His Mona arrived only minutes after he had. She swiftly moved into his cell. As she passed by, I studied her for the first time. She was attractive, nothing like 152, yet pretty enough. But it was the look of worry on her face as she ran after 667 that made my stomach flip over. She cared about him enough to run to his aid after he had been injured. I frowned. I couldn't remember a time ever in my life when someone comforted me. Then again, the only times I had been injured were as a child figuring out the run of the cage, learning what weapons to choose, and hardest of all, learning how to kill. I had been alone ever since. Seeing 667's Mona run to him, her affection for him was obvious and unapologetic. For a moment, it made me regret the decision I had already made. Another cell door opened. 140 pounded past, his expression one of a male that was minutes away from sending a soul to hell. In a flash, my regret for losing 152 tonight was gone. Because here was a male that was a shadow of his former self. He had allowed himself to want and need a Mona. That had been his ruin. The crowd outside roared. Just as I was about to move from the doors, someone stepped out of the shadows. A guard stepped before me and flicked his chin in my direction.
Master has sent a message. He said that your opponent belongs to one of the biggest investors. He has bought several shares and many gulags from Master over the years and is planning to enter many fighters in the tournament. Master has demanded that you slow the kill and not simply slaughter.
The guard stepped closer, holding his gun toward me.
Master said that if you don't obey, there will be consequences.
My top lip hooked in amusement. His taking 152 from me was the best punishment I would receive. The guard backed away, shaking his head. My legs moved from side to side as I warmed up my feet. I envisioned the kill in my head. I would duck right, then left, strike left, then plunge my Kinjal into him. The blade would pierce his heart, and he would fall to the floor. I opened my eyes. Just as I did, 140 came walking through, covered in blood spatter with the wide, staring eyes of bloodlust. He rushed past, panting and high from the kill. My adrenaline spiked. I'd be up next. When the guard walked down the hallway, I cracked my neck from side to side. When the cell door opened, I sprinted down the tunnel to the pit. With every step I envisioned my opponent's blood hitting my chest, and the thrill I'd feel at disobeying Master. The crowd roared as I ran forward, King Jaws at the ready. Then something from the crowd caught my attention. As I fended off my opponent's strike, his bladed pickaxe narrowly missing my head, I looked up at the crowd. A flash of light caught my eye again. At the very back, directly behind Master's seat, was a guard, and in his arms was 152. It took me a moment to realize what I was seeing. Then it made perfect sense. A guard had a knife to 152's throat. The light was the blade glinting off the pit's lights. Immediately, rage ignited inside me. My eyes dropped to Master as I ducked under my opponent's swing. When I saw him, he was smiling, victory in his dark gaze. His hands gripping the arms of his seat was the only indication that he harbored doubt that I would let her die. Feeling my opponent approach, I crouched down. The wind from his axe passed, blowing through my hair. Turning, I drove the blunt end of my handle into his kidney, a huge, dark-skinned man bending over at the hit. I backed away, steeling my emotions. I narrowed my eyes on my opponent, forcing myself to turn off my concerns about the Mona. Ignore her. She means nothing. Let her die, I told myself, turning my kinjals in my hands, readying to strike. My opponent turned, his close-shaved black hair and sheer height coming into view, almost matching mine. His teeth were bared as he faced me, gripping his axe as he prepared to strike. Replaying my plan in my head, I ducked left as he charged, then made a quick right. But as I approached and the bladed tip of his axe rose high, I did not use the anticipated gap to my advantage. Instead, I let the blade's sharp edge slash my upper arm. The crowd roared as 419, my opponent, drew first blood. Unable to stop myself, I glanced up at 152, who was still as night in the guard's arms. Even from this distance, I could see her eyes shining in pure terror. Just let me die, I heard in my head, 152's soft voice from 2 weeks ago. I shook my head, trying to forget about her up there, with a knife at her throat. I tried not to care. But just as I couldn't let her die on the floor of my cell before, I wouldn't let her die now. Something inside me, feeling like a dull ache in my chest, wouldn't let me. Sighing deeply, I ran at my opponent, smashing the kinjal's blunt handle to his face. He responded with a punch to my cheek, and I put on a fucking show. I gave Master what he wanted, hit after hit, blow after blow. 419 and I were both cut, bleeding and bruised. I had gashes on my arms, gashes on my torso, and swelling on my cheeks. But I knew, without a shadow of doubt, that I could have beaten him in seconds if Master hadn't forced me to submit. 419 was nothing. As a contender, he was a joke. Yet I made this fight look like I'd barely hung on. Enraged at what I'd been forced to do, at what I'd allowed myself to do, I stood and gripped my kinjals. Enough was enough. I'd toyed with this fighter too long. It was beneath me to play with this male any longer. It was time for him to die. 419 swayed on his feet, on the brink of passing out. His axe hung by his side, his slackening fingers barely able to hold the heavy steel. Needing to see him fall, see this male breathe his last, I charged forward, and in a double movement of my blades, I sliced across his stomach and stabbed Akinjal down and through his skull. My blade cut through him like butter, and the feel of his large body submitting to death sent the best drugs to my veins. The crowd jumped to their feet as 419 hit the bloodied sand beneath our feet. It was the loudest response I had ever received in the pit. And when I looked to 152 in the stands, the guard slowly removed the knife from her throat. I snarled, abruptly wrapped in a cocoon of pure hate when I saw a faint, bloodied line on her skin. And I knew, in that moment, I knew Master hadn't been faking this threat. If I had failed to obey, he would have slit the High Mona's throat. He was crazed and unstable, but he was obsessed with the female. Yet to break me, to see me bow down to his feet, he would have slit her throat without a second thought. A mixture of anger and some cavernous feeling I couldn't describe swirled in my stomach, because I knew by this match that I had given Master a hold over my mind. The realization hit home. He hadn't sent 152 to me weeks ago to make me want her, then hurt me by taking her away. He had given me her to threaten her life. His High Mona, the female he stared at like he wanted to completely possess her soul. He had given her to me to force me to yield to his control. And it had worked. As furious as that made me, I couldn't deny the truth. I had played right into his hands. Even as I stood here now, seething, almost splintering apart with the most intense rage, my eyes kept drifting to 152, dressed in a sheer, deep purple dress. She was frozen to the spot, but she watched me too. Her eyes were a mixture of confusion and pain, but they were fixed on me, solely on me. Her attention only made me break more. I hated myself for submitting like a mewling bitch, and despite myself, I hated her for being the cause of this truth. Snapping my eyes away, I ranged my gaze over the crowd. I wanted nothing more than to jump into the fray and tear them all apart. I wanted to shred their limbs and snap their bloodthirsty necks. Then my eyes found Master, still sitting in his seat, staring down at me, looking every inch the Blood Pit King, focusing on me, his champion, the one he now controlled in every way possible. As if knowing what I was thinking, a slow victorious grin pulled on his lips. My legs physically shook as I tried to keep from sacrificing my life just to take his life first. But as his wide, glittering eyes looked up to 152, standing like a broken child behind him, I planted my feet into the sand. A wave of protectiveness washed over me when I saw who 152 was looking at. Me. And I saw Master's livid reaction to who held her gaze. This time when he looked at me, there was a new fire in his stare. He had given his Mona to me, but he didn't want her to want me. He wanted her affection all to himself. My cheek twitched as I fought the smirk threatening on my lips. Master caught it, though. His knuckles became white as he gripped the arms of his seat. He leaned forward, his hard face showing how much he wanted to order my death. For a moment, when he rose to his feet and the crowd quieted down, I thought he would see through his biggest wish. Then a darker man, dressed in strange clothing, stood beside him and shook his hand. The male was smiling wide, nodding his head at something Master said. As I glanced to the dead male beside me in the pit, I saw the similarities to him in the strangely dressed male. It was his master. the one my master had needed me to win over. I had done as master planned. The crowd grew restless as the males talked. When master finally looked back my way, he dismissed me from the pit with a quick flick of his wrist. Turning on my heel, I jogged out of the ring and down the warrior's tunnel. I forced myself to look unaffected, but when the tunnel darkened and I knew I was out of the spectator's view, I drew to a stop and clenched my teeth at the pain stabbing at my body. I glanced behind me and saw my bloodied footprints on the sand. I raked my gaze over my body and growled low when I saw I was littered with gashes, deep slices showing more than a few hints of open flesh. I hadn't been touched in 5 years, hadn't sustained a scratch since I became champion, and simply decided that no opponent would ever touch me again. I knew this match had just made the excitement for Master's 6 spectators that much stronger. The champion, the Arziani Pitbull, had just been wounded in the show rounds. It would raise expectations. More investors would join, eager to have their champions bring me down once and for all. I heard the guards beginning to move in behind me. I kept going, struggling to walk all the way to my cell. As I passed 667 cell, I heard a high-pitched giggle drifting into the hallway. I stopped dead as Ismona laughed again. The sound cut through me like a knife. Not because I couldn't stand the sound, but because I'd rarely heard that sound in my entire life. As his Mona laughed again, 152's beautiful face came into my head. I saw her tears. I saw her fear. I didn't see her laugh. My heart stuttered as I envisioned her smiling at me or laughing at something I'd said. I couldn't breathe, as I was trapped in that dream. I fell apart when I caught 140 moving to his cell door. He stared at me with his vacant, lifeless eyes as his arms threaded through the bars and hung across the horizontal bar. When 667's Mona laughed again, 140 moved his attention to the other champion's cell door. He spoke without looking at me.
"It's only a question of time," he said coldly, his body still bathed in his opponent's blood. "When Master feels like it, needs something, or simply wants to fuck with his mind, he'll kill her."
140 pointed at 667 cell.
"He'll start by taking her from him every now and again. He'll expect her, and she won't arrive. When she does, she'll be hurt and bruised. She'll be quiet. He'll bring her to a cell door or have him brought to the Mona quarters. Then, with 667 restrained, Master will take her or stand by her as he orders another warrior or guard to do it for him. 667 will slowly begin to break, seeing his female being forced to take another man's cock."
His hands moved to tighten on the bars. Then he bit out,
"He'll kill her in front of him, and he'll die along with her."
He looked to me, but I knew his eyes were still locked in the past.
"Only he'll be forced to still live in this pit, waking each day and fighting some other man-made animal he doesn't give a shit about in the ring. And the worst part is, Master won't even think of it again. He'll move on to play with another warrior's head, because that's what he does. He created this empire to toy with us, his slaves."
667's laughs came from his cell, and my eyes drifted to fix on his door.
"I have been here since I was 10. I don't know how many years have passed. Master makes sure we don't know, doesn't he? But I guess that I am in my 20s. I got my Mona, I think, about 2 years ago."
I glanced back to 140. Now he was staring at me.
In all the years I have been here, I only remember those days I spent with her. They are the only memories I have. I don't remember much of my childhood because of the drugs. I don't remember my fights because I have killed too many too often. But I remember every second spent with her. His face flushed red. And I remember the gleam in Master's eyes when he slit her throat as my punishment for not being effective enough in the pit. I received a blow to my arm that the Master thought made his warrior, me, look inefficient. So he killed my heart.
He is an unworthy male, I responded.
140 laughed a humorless laugh. Then his face hardened back to a deathly expression.
Since my Mona died, I have been thinking every night, why are we here? Where did we all come from? Why did Master create this blood pit?
His face contorted.
And why the hell are we all obeying? We are all warriors. We kill. That is all we do. We kill every day. As children, we killed. As males, we kill. Yet we do not kill them.
He meant the wraiths.
We don't ask questions about anything. We don't rise up. We only know this life. And we accept it.
Most of the male fighters are drugged more than we are. We are on special privileges because we are champions, I said.
The Chiri gave us our drugs every day. Every person in this pit, the Monebi, the Ubitsi, the fighters, us, why? Why do we all do it? If the Chiri were to stop the injections, the males would fight with clear heads. We could save the Monebi, whose only purpose is to spread their legs and then be killed. We could be free.
You want to be free? I asked, his words circling my head. I couldn't stop his questions from becoming my own.
He shook his head. No. I want to die. I want to leave this life.
I frowned. 140 leaned forward as much as he could out the cell door and said,
But I'll take as many of these fuckers as I can as I go. Master, if possible. He's investors at the very least. Since he killed my Mona, I have nothing left to live for. Once I get my chance, I will take it with eyes wide open, and I'll die with a smile on my face, knowing I have taken some of the wraiths down with me.
How will you do it? I asked, my heart beating faster. I was siding with his plan. My body celebrated the thought of his vision.
He shrugged. I don't know yet, but the time will come. I'm praying all of us slaves will finally rise up and take them all down. But if that never happens, I'll die doing it myself.
I was quiet after he had spoken. 140 began backing away, but before he disappeared into the privacy of his cell, he said,
You, 667, and I have been in these quarters almost the same amount of time. In all of those days, I have never seen you even gain a scratch in battle.
His eyes narrowed, then widened, clearly realizing something important. Moving closer again, he guessed correctly.
The Mona. The high Mona that you have been servicing each night. He used her, didn't he?
My lips rubbed together, and a sense of failure took me in its hold. 140 shook his head slowly and sighed.
You want her?
He stared at me and added, I thought you felt nothing for her. I have walked past the cell and seen her in the corner, alone, afraid. His head tipped to the side as he searched my hard expression.
But you do.
And he now knows it. His hands took hold of the bars.
Am I right?
My silence said everything. How did he threaten her? Did he threaten to take her back? Did he hit her, starve her, give her to another warrior?
I vibrated on the spot as I thought of the guard holding a knife to her throat. I held my kinjals tighter as I replayed the wide look in her eyes. Opening them, I hissed.
He was going to cut her throat. He had a guard stand behind her. He ordered me to make more of the fight, to draw out the kill.
I glanced away in annoyance, then added,
I was going to just let her die. I needed to let her die.
But you couldn't,
140 finished. I wanted to snarl back that he didn't know what he was talking about, that I didn't care for the Mona that had been forced upon me. But the words wouldn't come from my mouth. I couldn't get them out, no matter what I tried.
He was going to kill her,
140 prompted, and stepped back. His hard expression turned to sympathy.
What?
I spat, edging forward toward his cell. 140 stopped. Then, running his hand over his face, he said,
Then you're fucked.
He tested you. He normally starts slow, but with you and his Mona, he puts everything on the line. He crossed his arms. We've all seen him parading the High Mona through the pits, holding her close, owning her, possessing her. His eyebrow raised. Even though he has given her to you, he hasn't truly given her to you. And if he was willing to kill her for your submission, it means he will risk it all for you to break. It makes you the most sorry son of a bitch in this place. As 140 walked away, he said,
I didn't even know her name. I knew her number, but not her name.
Fuck, I don't even know my own.
I know nothing. None of us knows anything outside of how we live and exist in here. But without the drugs, the privilege we earn as champions, it means that we can think for ourselves. I don't know what the world outside is like, but I know that this place of blood and pain is wrong. I feel it in my heart. I feel it with everything I am.
The sound of the guards approaching made me move forward. With every step I took, the fire inside rose higher and higher until I felt like I was burning from the inside out. When I reached my cell, I slammed the door shut and leaned my heavy body against the nearest wall. My legs gave way as I slumped to the floor. My arms fell down, the injuries making them weak. My kinjals clattered on the stone floor. Trickles of blood ran over my cut skin and onto the floor beside me. I stared straight ahead, unable to move. 140 was right. All of the years here in the pit I had spent alone, untouched and untouchable. And now they were gone. All because of Master's whore. I'd put my dick before my strength. Now I was as much Master's toy as 152. I had given him my pride. I had nothing left. I didn't know how long I sat there, but the sound of light, quick feet approaching my cell pulled my attention to the door. My chest constricted when 152 appeared. A guard opened the door, then slammed it in her wake. Her blue eyes were huge as she watched me sitting in the floor. Rather than be glad that she'd survived, it only fueled the fire in my blood. Nervously, she stepped closer, then began to bend down to where I sat. Before she could, I threw my kinjals across the cell, the noise thundering on the floor. She flinched and staggered back. Meeting her gaze to show her how much I wanted her gone, I snapped, Get in the corner and get out of my fucking sight. I heard her suck in a deep breath. A stab of some unknown feeling rumbled around my stomach. I pushed it aside when she scurried past me and crouched down. I felt her watchful gaze, but I didn't look her way. My skin felt on fire, my muscles twitching in agitation. The air in the cell seemed too thick, too hot. I fought to draw in a simple breath. Movement outside my cell door caused my head to turn. A guard let in a cheery who had arrived to stitch my wounds. She carried a bowl of water in her hands, the needles and threads in a small bag hanging from a string around her fingers. The cheery bent to work on my wounds. I pulled my arm away when she tried to clean off the blood. "Get off," I hissed. "I'll do it myself." The cheery bowed her head at my harshness and immediately got to her feet. She rocked from side to side like she didn't know what to do. I looked up and saw her eyes widen as she stared at the stone floor. Her face was pale, and when I looked to her clasped hands at her waist, they were trembling. 140's words about all of us in this pit played in my mind, about where we all came from, about how we all do what Master says without questions. All the Chiri wore the tattoo 000. I didn't even know her name. I didn't even know my own. "Leave them here," I said, less harshly this time. "I'll fix it myself." The Chiri turned for the door, and I saw her shoulders slump in relief. She was scared of me. I risked a quick glance to 152 in the corner. She was huddled down, her body facing toward the wall. She was scared of me, too. For the first time since becoming the Arziani Pitbull, Master's cold and ruthless champion, it unsettled me. Everyone was scared of me. Even the guards never came too close to the cell, for fear I'd snap their necks. It was a well-founded fear. I'd done it to them many times before. Opponents had even pissed themselves when I'd run into the pit from the darkness of the tunnel. Everyone stayed clear. It was something I'd ensured was the case. 667 had told me that we, all under Master's rule, were the same. We had to protect one another. I had only ever taken care of myself. The clanging of the cell door shutting echoed off the stone walls. And then we were in silence. My head fell back against the cold wall, and I closed my eyes, simply breathing. I wanted to black out, just fall asleep and wake up with 152 gone and my life back to how it had always been. I felt the lines crease on my forehead when I thought about my life before the past couple of weeks. It was the same thing every day. Wake, eat, be injected, train, then on match days, kill. It was an endless cycle. A hole caved in the pit of my stomach. 140 had told me the privilege we got from being champions was being free from the drugs. We could think. Think for ourselves. For so much of my life, I had no memory of how I had lived, of how I was taken. I didn't even know my name. Once I was off the drugs and moved into these quarters, I quickly fell into my routine. But now 140 had implanted a seed inside my head, one of free thought. Opening my eyes, I looked down at my cut arms and legs. I saw the blood washing over my stomach, drying over my identity tattoo. 901. It was 901, nothing more, nothing less. I was Arziani's pit bull, the most efficient and successful killer the blood pit had ever known. I wondered if I was ever something more. If I was freed from this place, could I be more? The squeeze of my chest told me I was, and I could. I tried to envision what the world was like above ground. I couldn't. My only memory of being out there was when the wraiths had taken me, when they had arrived in the night and taken me from my bed. There was nothing else. I thought of the thousands of investors. I thought of the spectators that sat in the crowd at the matches. They were not from the pit. They were from outside. They had lives. They were free. So why weren't we? Why wasn't I? The skin began twitching around my wounds. I knew I had no choice but to tend to them. If I was to be okay for the tournament, I had to seal the wounds so they wouldn't get infected. Taking the bag off the floor, I ripped it open, the thread already hanging through the needle. Holding out my arm, I picked up the needle and brought it to my first wound.